All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your hosts for today's program, Dale Thronberry and Bob Gould.
And hello, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I am one of the hosts today. Joining me in the studio, as soon as I can get his attention, is Bob Gould from the 101st Airborne.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to get the band. There we go. We got the orchestra. There we are. I know. They love our theme, but we got to get on with this program. I know. We're not used to all these extra minutes for new. There it is. They're back again. You know what? We got to pay these guys more money or something.
Not to worry. Not to worry. It's a great theme. We want to welcome everybody to Veterans Radio, and we're going to start right off with a segment that we used to do. Well, we've done for the last 10 years, but we haven't done one in a long time, and that's Welcome Home. And in this case, we're going to welcome home Bo Bergdahl, who was exchanged for some Taliban prisoners down at Guantanamo.
Fantastic.
And we'd like to congratulate the Obama administration for actually getting this accomplished. And I know that it must have taken a lot of negotiating to get this done. So,
and that's what you expect from your commander-in-chief, to make these kind of tough decisions. We do promise. We promise all our service people that we are going to provide to their health, well-being, and safety. And that has to be a very, very strong consideration. Bring these people home. Anybody
absolutely.
Who might say, hey, take this guy's place for a couple of years. Let him come home, and you can go ahead and take his place. I thought it was okay the way that all worked out. That's what a commander-in-chief's supposed to
do. Well, the idea is that the military never leaves anybody behind.
That's
if they
right.
do, they make sure they go and get them. We've done many programs on that theme, and we want to again just welcome Bo Bergdorf back home, back home. Boy, I can't imagine how excited his parents are, his friends, and of course he is.
We are.
They, you know, when he got on the rescue helicopter that came in to pick him up, he scratched out a note on a pen and said, "Special Forces?" And they said yes, and that's when he got emotional. He finally realized that he was safe and he was going home.
Well, I can't wait for the interview.
So, yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah.
Okay, there's our job. Let's get him
that's
on
it.
There.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to welcome you all to Veterans Radio. We want to make sure that everybody knows that Veterans Radio is sponsored by Legal Help for Veterans. If you have a question, call Legal Help for Veterans. You can go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com. Also, the Big Boy Restaurant at the intersection of U.S. 23 and Plymouth Road in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and all of the Michigan Applebee restaurants who are supporting Veterans Radio. And we've got a special announcement coming up, not quite yet.
Next week.
But Applebee's, I should point out that Applebee's does give, in Michigan, 30% discount to all veterans every Monday for your meal.
That's fantastic.
That's an amazing deal. And
a salute. I mean, that really does. You know, you can talk about 5%, but 30%. And it's family dining. Fantastic.
That's right. It is.
Honor the vets.
And they'll give you a little card that says that, that you're entitled to this. If you go into any Applebee's in southeastern Michigan, just take along one of your military IDs, either your VFW card, VVA, VA card, whatever it happens to be, and you'll get that discount. So, and when you do get the discount, let them know that you heard about it on Veterans Radio.
And also the other days besides Monday, it's 10%. They've gone all out.
Oh, all right. So
absolutely.
I guess I got to wear one of those shirts every single day
every
now.
Single day.
Do they have breakfast? Oh, no, we go to the Big Boy for breakfast.
We go to
and
Big
then,
Boy,
and
that's
then,
right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They've got the smorgasbord of the Big Boy.
Okay. We're going to be talking about D-Day today, and we've got a lot of people that are going to be lining up on our phones. We've got Martin Morgan, who is in England right now for the 70th anniversary of D-Day, and I've got a feeling he's probably going to be reenacting it next week. He's made a great photography study of D-Day, all these old pictures, just fascinating, and he's going to be on the program. We've got Wayne Van Sant, who did a great graphic novel on Normandy. Wayne has been on our program before, and of course, our good friend Dwight Zimmerman is going to be on later on, and he has written extensively on D-Day. So we're going to have all those people, and we might have a surprise guest, and I can't give it away because he promised to call, and it is a World War II veteran who was there on the very first day. It landed on Omaha Beach.
I'd like to add something here, Dale. Folks, we welcome your phone calls. We welcome your phone calls, and you call us at 844-VET-1600. That's 844-838-1600. Now, keep it on topic. So yeah. we want to see these phone lines light up, but keep it on topic today. Save all your extracurricular comments that you want to do and go to our website for that.
Anyway, also, I'm supposed to, everybody's waving their hands over there. Make sure we tell everybody that Veterans Radio is on Facebook, and we are also on Twitter. And so enough of that. But right now, our first guest is Amanda Shore Davis, and she is the executive director of the Star Spangled Banner Flag House and Museum in Baltimore, Maryland. And Amanda has a great story to tell. Amanda, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, Dale. Thank you for having me today. I'm very excited to be with you guys.
Well, we're excited to have you on. Could you please just tell our audience what it is that the Star Spangled Banner Flag House and Museum has got going? It sounds fascinating to me.
Absolutely. So first and foremost, we're the historic house and museum devoted to Mary Pickersgill, the maker of the Star Spangled Banner flag that inspired Francis Scott Key to write the poem that in 1931 became our official national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we are today. But on Saturday, June 14th at noon, we are going to be hosting a special program for Flag Day, and that is called Hashtag the Flag I Carried. And unfortunately, Matt Eversman, sort of our spokesperson for the event, couldn't be with us today because he's actually traveling to Normandy for the D-Day anniversary. But this program is honoring veterans and the flags that they carry with them on deployment and into battle. Something that I don't think a lot of people realize is veterans and current service members oftentimes have carried flags with them during their deployments as symbols of home and reminders of what it is that they're fighting for. And so we're honoring veterans on Flag Day this year at the Flag House. We're inviting veterans, their families, and the public to come down, bring their flags. If they want to raise their flags on one of the flagpoles at our museum, they get a special certificate because we're a national historic landmark.
Cool.
And we'll have a special program that honors two women who also served during World War II. One is an Army Corps nurse, and the other was actually a Rosie the Riveter. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay, and this is on Flag Day, June 14th. Remind everybody out there, go out and get your flags. Put those flags up in your yard, on your house, on your roof, wherever you put your flag. Put them out there on Flag Day.
Show the flag.
We got to get more people to put their flags out there, don't we?
Absolutely, and if anybody wants to share their story, a veteran or a veteran's family would like to share their story and a picture of the flag that maybe their veteran carried, you can visit us on our website, www.flaghouse.org, or on our Facebook. We'd love to have those stories shared with us.
Okay. Can you give me the website again one more time?
Sure. It's www.flaghouse.org.
Flaghouse.org. We're going to be, hopefully we're going to have Matt on next week to just promo it one more time. So
yes,
we want to make sure, we want to thank Amanda for coming on Veterans Radio, promoting this. Make sure you go to their website. Tell your stories. If you carried a flag with you guys, men and women now, in combat, it's a cool kind of thing to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dale. I appreciate it.
Okie dokie. Bob, you've got somebody who's got another event coming up.
Dale, you know, folks, from time to time, you folks send us things and little blurbs and public relations and events. Please keep doing it. Please. This came April 15th, of all things, from someone, a listener, and they talked about HAVA introduces Adopt Fritz Veteran Program essay contest that awards a fully trained bird dog. The Honored American Veterans Afield, HAVA, they announced a very unique essay writing contest for veterans in active duty military of the Iraq and Afghanistan eras. It's called Adopt Fritz. And with me on the line right now, Mr. Tom Taylor, from Vice President of Sales and Marketing from the Mossberg Corporation. He is also the HAVA Chairman. Tom, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Great to be here, Bob.
HAVA's mission is to assist the veterans' recovery by getting them back outdoors, and Adopt Fritz will encourage that essay writing contest. Tell us more about that, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, over the past 7 years in the history of HAVA, we've been taking mostly disabled and veterans as well as active duty wounded out, And, you know, through that time, we've expanded to several programs that really have to do with, you know, touching people and or getting people back in touch with the outdoors. And someone who saw our mission, who is a world-class dog trainer, contacted us and said, hey, I'm willing to train this dog for several months, do a training program for a willing, you know, or a deserving person. And so we put this program together. So we wanted somebody to kind of tell us why they thought Fritz would be a great addition to their life, and we're running the program now.
Now, what's the veteran population that you're looking to reach?
Well, on this particular program, you know, we're looking for you know, Afghanistan and Iraq era veterans. Our program serves all veterans as well as active duty military, but this particular program, we decided to narrow it down just a little bit to keep the essays sort of focus for our judges and those kind of things. But this really was intended to touch anybody who comes in contact with it, either in the States or in theater.
Now, let's make this clear, folks. They didn't have to necessarily serve in Iraq or Afghanistan, but be part of the Afghan-Iraq era. Is that true, Tom?
That is true.
Well, and you help them heal with your outreach with guided tours, hunts, shooting events, outdoor sports activities. You're helping these disabled veterans. How do you find that your conclusions, that your results have indicated?
Well, it's something that started very small. We've taken actually, all four of the guys we took on our first event before HAVA was formed as an organization, four active duty wounded gentlemen, and those of us involved in that first hunt down at Caney Creek Lodge in Texas, we all kind of looked at each other and said, you know, I think this is special because we saw what it meant in their life. You know, most had been severely wounded, and to see that they could get out and do something that was a big part of normalcy in their lives prior to their injuries. We said, you know, let's see if we can do something else to help. And we did another hunt, which has grown into now serving over 1,000 people a year, either through guided hunts or shooting days at ranges. And we even our flagship events are actually family days, where we have ranges open for active duty and wounded veterans, as well as family members with airsoft and everything from bounce houses to, you know, anything that can make a family have a fun day. And we see, you know, our results are measured, you know, not so much by statistics or anything like that, but just the amount of fun and camaraderie we see when we get these people together.
Is the Adopt Fritz program still running?
It is. It's going to run through June 15th. If you saw the original program, we had only done it 30 days, but we decided to extend it based on the response we were getting. So it's going to run through June 15th.
We got about 1 minute or less. So real quick, why don't you give us how folks can find out more about Adopt Fritz, find out more about disabled veterans, hunting, guided tours, etc. Why don't you give us all that information?
Yeah, very easy. If you go on honoredveterans.org, which is our website for Honored American Veterans of the Field, there's a section right on the homepage about Adopt Fritz. And then there's also information where you can, if you're interested in going on a hunt or attending one of our shooting days, you can send us emails. We check those regularly. You can check our Facebook page, which you can get to through our website. And all of our information is right there. And you know, we're not trying to be the largest veteran support program. We're just trying to touch people kind of one person at a time and do our best to just give back to the best of our ability.
Well, I'm going to be back. In fact, I'm going to be back on the air on June 15th. I'd like to have you back on again and give us the results of this essay contest. Can you come back on the program, Tom?
I sure can.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you very much for giving up your Sunday afternoon. Go back to your family. God bless you, and we'll be talking later.
Thank you for having me, Bob. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tom. This is Dale. We want to make sure that people are aware of all of these programs. In fact, next week, Jim Falsone from Legal Help for Veterans is going to be doing a program on benefits of outdoor experiences on veterans. And so we want to make sure that people pay listen in next week. That's on June 8th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. and he's going to have Rick Briggs is going to be on. Rick is the executive director of the Traumatic Brain Injury Institute of Michigan and also a professional bass fisherman.
Remember when we went to that disabled veterans, oh, that must have been 8 years ago or so, went to that meeting, and they talked about the hunting experience for veterans.
Right.
Folks, this gentleman had one arm, one hand, everything else was gone, and he went hunting. I'm amazed, and God bless people that support that.
It's great. And we want to thank you. We're going to be right back in just a moment. We'll be talking about D-Day, so stay tuned to Veterans Radio.
I'm retired First Sergeant Matt Eversman. I served two combat tours, one in Somalia in 1993 and another in Iraq in 2006. I was one of the Rangers who participated in the battle that inspired the book and the movie Black Hawk Down. These are the flags I carried into battle. Please join me, fellow veterans, and all patriotic Americans at the Flag House on Flag Day, June 14th. As we raise veterans' flags at a special program to honor veterans, their families, and our country. Hashtag the flag I carry. If you are a veteran, please share your flag and your story on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter and tag hashtag the flag I carry. For more information, visit www.flaghouse.org.
Back on Veterans Radio, and I want to welcome everybody to the program here at WAAM 1600 Talk. And right now we're trying to, you know, it's amazing. We could send an entire army and navy across the Atlantic to invade Europe, but we can't seem to get a phone call through it right now. So we're going to go to Plan B for just a second, and we're going to bring on our guest right now. It's going to be Wayne Van Sant. And Wayne, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, glad to be here.
It's glad to be anywhere, right?
Right, absolutely.
Well, the reason I asked Wayne to come on the program today is he's been on in the past, but he has written a graphic history of D-Day called Normandy, a graphic history of D-Day, and the Allied invasion of Hitler's Fortress Europe. And it's, I'm trying to describe it. For those of us of our generation who went to high school in the 50s and 60s, it's sort of like a really upscale Classics Illustrated.
Yeah, I don't mind calling it a comic book. You have to get used to that term.
Yeah, but well, except for the stories that are in there, it's amazing.
Well, it's that kind of presentation and that kind of genre is something I've always loved. When I was a kid, most of the comic books were not that great, but some of them stood out. I mean, Sam Glanton's Combat series in the early 60s told basically documentary stories of the war. And, of course, as you mentioned, there was the Classics Illustrated in their sideline, which was called The World Around Us, that told historical things about many subjects.
Well, why did you choose to do one on Normandy?
Well, it's just a great subject for one thing, but it was funny. I was thinking about this since I was contacted the other day, and I worked on Marvel's The Nom, the book, their comic book about Vietnam for in the late 80s and early 90s, and right, I was thinking then, boy, wouldn't it be neat to do a book about the Normandy campaign, and with the 50th anniversary was coming up. Which, of course, be in 94. And a lot of good books were coming out about Normandy, and I read just about all of them. And, in fact, I had started me a notebook a kind of an outline of what I would do and the material I would use. Basically, this outline was I had one page for every day, say from before the invasion until after the liberation of Paris.
And when I had time,
I was reading on this book. I would add information in this notebook. Well, nobody was interested in doing anything like this, and at that time, in fact, I was still doing work for Marvel, and I mentioned them, and it was like that they didn't know what I was talking about, because the book about Vietnam I did for them was kind of the fifth wheel for them, because it was very popular, but most of Marvel stuff is superheroes,
mm-hmm.
something that never interests me.
Well, these people in Normandy certainly were superheroes.
Without a doubt. So I hung on to that material until I needed it.
Well, I'm going to ask you to just hold on for a second, because it looks like we finally got our phone call through. So I'm just going to bring on Martin Morgan here. Martin, good afternoon. Did we lose you?
Wayne's still here.
All right. Well, Wayne's still here. That's for sure. It's a good thing. So of the characters in your graphic novel, it's called Normandy, A Graphic History of D-Day, who did you feel was the most interesting character that you came upon?
Gosh, that's difficult.
There's a lot of them in there.
Well, yeah, and it's and when I first started putting this material together, of course, you didn't have the internet at that time, and there's, of course, tons of interesting characters. I would have to say that there's certain units would step out as being interesting rather than individuals. I know that, of course, the 29th, which landed in Omaha Beach, and then the 30th that was at the Mortain and all that. But one unit that really caught people's attention when this book came out, and I got a lot of comments about, was the German 12th SS, the Hitler Youth Division.
Right.
That for in fact, I have one chapter dedicated just to them called the Devil's Children, and that was one that it kind of surprised me that there were so many comments and interest about that. But of course, there were just so many people, it'd be impossible to pick an individual. One thing I found that was kind of funny. There was a character, a British Sergeant Major Stanley Hollis, and I could not. He had been at Dunkirk and fought in North Africa and Sicily, and he had he had killed 90 Germans up to the point of the Normandy invasion, and he landed on let's see, which beach was it? Was it the Green Howards? I can't. Gold Beach, okay. And I couldn't find a single picture of him. And so I went ahead and drew him kind of as a tough-looking, kind of burly-looking guy with a, kind of a handlebar mustache. He looked like your typical British sergeant major. And then later, long after the book came out, I found a picture of this guy. And he was this real gawky, skinny guy with these long teeth with big gaps in between them. I mean, he had kind of the, what you think about a lot of times, the British dental work. But it was so funny. I thought, well, I'm kind of glad I didn't have that picture before that. But, hey, you try to get as close as you can, but sometimes you're going to miss it. And,
well,
was always funny.
It would be interesting, Wayne, if you had Martin's book, because he's got pictures of many of these people in there, and I'm going to try and bring him on again.
Good.
And I just cut off Wayne. Oh, well, I'll learn. Martin, are you there?
I am here.
Wow. What a great connection. Are you sure you're not in a building?
I'm pretty sure I'm not. Greetings from London. I think we had more trouble than Churchill and Roosevelt did in communicating.
I think so. And we're having our own little difficulties as we learn how to use the phones in a new studio. But I've got you, and I'm not touching anything anymore today. It's all up to the control room to bring people on and off the lines. Now, right now we are talking with Martin Morgan, whose book is called The Americans on D-Day. And as Wayne was just talking, describing some of the English people in there, your foreword was by our guest from last week, and that was John McManus. and evidently you guys are notorious historians on D-Day.
Yes, we are, both of us notorious. Him a little bit more so than me, and by notorious I mean accomplished.
Yes, that's what I meant. That you guys know everything, and it's well, it seems like you know everything. What motivated you to pull all these photographs together? And it's a fantastic book, folks. I would strongly advise anybody who's interested in World War II and especially Normandy. And if you've still got grandparents or parents that are alive that were in Normandy, they need to see this book.
Well, thank you so much for the compliments. I got interested in putting this book together as a byproduct of my first book. 10 years ago, I wrote a book titled Down to Earth, 507th Parachute Infantry Regiment in Normandy. And it chronicled the 35 days of combat that one regiment experienced. As I assembled images for that book, I picked up other images along the way. And as I did so, I was finding that many of those images are familiar images.
Okay, I've been messing with the phones, it seems like. We're running up against the clock, so I need to take a break right now. You're listening to Veterans Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
On the air here now, and we get rid of the sound, and up we go. And I'm going to ask the control room to punch up our two guests. Right now we're talking with Martin Morgan and also with Wayne Van Sant. And Martin, we were just talking about the motivation, I guess you could say, behind this book. And where did you find some of these photographs? They're amazing.
Well, most of it is from the U.S. National Archives, but I'm also publishing photos in the book that were from private collections, and some of them have never been published before, which is an aspect of the book that I believe contributes to the scholarship of the Normandy invasion.
They're just amazing stories, and it's kind of interesting because you both kind of followed the whole thing chronologically and across Normandy and into France. And it was interesting as I was looking at the photographs to go over to Wayne's book and look at the drawings and how they were very similar. Wayne, I wanted to let you know that it was just fascinating.
I haven't seen the book yet. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to have to go out and get a copy.
I think we are. We want to make sure we sell at least one copy so Martin can pay for his trip to Normandy himself. But it is a fascinating story. And Martin, I'm going to ask you the same question. Who did you think was the most interesting character that you came upon in the photographs?
Well, I'm particularly fond of a character by the name of Reuben Weiner. And Mr. Weiner served in the 165th Signal Photographic Company during the Normandy invasion as a camera operator, both still and motion picture. Mr. Weiner was attached to the 508th Parachute Infantry Regiment of the 82nd Airborne Division for the Normandy invasion. And although he was just a camera operator, he was put through an accelerated jump school and jumped into combat with the 82nd. All he was armed with was a 1911 A1 pistol, and he carried then as his primary tools of war a Speed Graphic still camera and then an IMO motion picture camera. He documented many of the now famous scenes of the 82nd Airborne Division in the areas around the drop zones in the immediate vicinity of St. Mary-Glise. I thought he was an interesting character just because he was at the right place at the right time, and he introduced me to one of the realities that we encountered during the invasion, and that is, although we planned to cover it very, very effectively and very extensively with photographers, the fog of war and the battle, the nature of it was such that many of the photographs were lost. There's the famous incident related to the photographer Robert Capa, who loses most of the exposures that he shot on Omaha Beach on D-Day.
Oh.
There was also a loss of most of the motion picture camera footage that was shot by a group of photographers on Omaha Beach on D-Day. And then even within the 82nd Airborne Division, although each regiment jumped with a cameraman, it was really only Reuben Weiner that was able to collect a significant amount of photography and motion picture footage. And so there's this gap in the coverage of fighting during the initial days of the invasion, and I've really felt compelled to do something with that subject because it interested me.
I think it's a great story, and in fact, I'm going to bring on right now an eyewitness to the landing on Omaha Beach, and this is Ed Gorman. And Ed, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hello.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
Fine. How are you, sir?
I am terrific, sir. How are you?
Just fine, thank you.
I want to thank you very much for the effort that you've made to get on the program, and I'm just going to introduce you briefly. We're talking with Martin Morgan, who did a photographic history of D-Day. It's a book I think you'll find fascinating. And also to Wayne Van Sant, who did a graphic history book of the history of Normandy. So, Ed, I wanted to just ask you, I know this is probably difficult for you, but could you describe what Omaha Beach was like when you got there? I know you didn't even expect to get there.
Oh, that's true. It's very, very difficult to explain what we saw without it getting too emotional, but it was nothing like you had ever seen or ever dreamed of, because nothing that we could have ever done in any of the exercises we had been on or been through in the time training leading up to and including the invasion itself. The beach itself was just total disaster. Even now, I can't really explain without getting a little emotional just how devastating that whole area was, between the equipment, the crafts, the bodies, the beach itself. I mean, it was just total disaster, and yet at the same time, you saw it, you felt it, but you had a job to do, and you had to concentrate on the job because there was only one way to go, and that was inland. And in order to get there, we had to just not close our eyes to it, but just put it out of our minds, forcibly, so to speak, so that we could get on and do the job that we were all assigned to do. And those of us that did get to the beach and get our equipment to the beach found there was a tremendous dearth of equipment, and what little equipment that we brought to the beach was desperately needed to get communications going. I happened to overhear the conversation with regard to the loss of all of the pictures and the movies that were taken, and this is very true. And sitting here now and listening to it and thinking about it, I can fully understand how come it happened, why it happened, and no one was to blame. It's just things were just so bad, many times confusing. And with everything going on around you, you did what you had to do and take care of what you had to take care of, including helping wherever you could, and at the same time trying to do your job.
Well, Ed, we know you did a great job. You were only 20 years old at the time.
Yes.
And you're 90 years old today.
Yes.
And the day before D-Day, you really didn't know where you were going, did you?
No, I didn't. No, we really embarked or boarded the boats and landing craft on the 2nd of June, anticipating, not knowing anything, but setting sail on the 3rd of June, anticipating that we were going to do something supposedly on the 4th of June, but the bad weather, so bad, turned back. And then I happened to be one of those outfits that was kept on the boat. We remained on the ships, still not knowing whether we were going to go or not going to go, and still not knowing where we were going to go until the night of the 5th.
Oh, okay. What unit were you with?
I was with the 294th JASCO, Joint Assault Special Communications Operation, attached to the 5th Engineer Brigade.
And you landed on Omaha Beach?
Omaha Beach, yes, about a half a mile from my assigned landing spot.
Well, that wasn't too bad, but your landing craft didn't quite make it all the way to the beach, did it?
No, it didn't. We, on our first approach to the beach, we originally planned, or we were told that we would be landing somewhere in between the second and third waves, wherever we could fit in, because we were on what they call a rhino ferry. And this was like a large barge with no sides to it, but carried very heavy equipment, the 8x's and the personnel carriers and the weapons carriers and all of the reserve ammunition and so forth that was desperately needed to back up what we had on the beach. And on the way in, we hit a mine, and it affected our landing, our loading ramp. And so we were forced to back off. We were about 100 yards from the beach when we hit the first mine. And we backed off, and we had a troll for almost 6-7 hours, hoping to be able to fix the ramps. And with the help of the craft that they had, the repair craft that they had, they only had one or two, we finally got the gear fixed, the landing gear fixed. And in the meantime, we were on the fire on shore, and to the point where at one time we were under heavy smoke screen thanks to a British destroyer. But this didn't stop the plane from coming overhead and dropping a couple of bombs around us. And
yeah, you mentioned in the article that I read when I first found you was that the German planes were strafing the beach also,
right. Mm-hmm.
And that's how your landing craft was hit. You mentioned that once you got on shore and up onto the land, that you I just want to make a quick story here because I have some other people I need to get to. But you remember going and arriving in the French town of Colville-sur-Mer?
Colville-sur-Mer, which was the first town inside of France, right just maybe a half a mile from the beach. And that was the first little town that we captured or freed, I should say. And this was on 1-2.
Can you describe how the townspeople reacted when they saw you coming into town?
Oh, they were tremendously joyful. They were so happy. They were running around the small streets and in and out of houses, yelling, waving their arms, and crying, and thanking us, and merci, merci, and merci beaucoup, Americain. And the mayor of the town was running around carrying an American flag, thankful of are being there, and they just they had been living under the tyranny of the Third Reich for so long that they were really free, you know. And when we had a chance to talk to them some more, "We're free, we're free, we're free at last," they were saying to us.
Ed, this is Bob Gould. Where did you billet that night? Did you billet in that village?
No. We billeted alongside the road near the first night I built it on the beach. First night we were working all night on the beach, setting up communications lines and telephone and wire. And then the next morning moved our operation to closer to where the beachhead was, that is the beachmaster was, and then up onto the ridge. And they, D+1, were up on the ridge, close to where one of the big gun mounts was, one of the big German guns. And we were able to find a little bit of a cave there that evidently they had used for protection. And after all of the area was cleared of any bombs or any booby traps, we were able to proceed and set up our fairly firm operation, because we were moving every day after that. And that's where we stayed for the first few couple.
I wanted to let people know that, especially our listeners out in New Jersey, that you are in Woodbridge. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And what is the name of the American Legion Post, isn't it?
Yes, it's the Thaddeus Nolte Post, 471 Island, New Jersey.
Island, right off of exit 10 off the turnpike, right?
Yes.
Ed, I want to thank you so very much. We're definitely going to have you back on the program to talk more, and I just want to make sure that people understand. This is Ed Gorman. Look him up, and if you're in New Jersey, I'm sure you wouldn't mind having somebody come over and say, hey, how you doing?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ed, for being on the program, and we'll be in touch soon.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's great to hear the stories, you know. I mean, wow. It's great to hear it. I mean,
I know. I mean, it makes it very emotional, you know. And Martin and Wayne, I appreciate your patience in listening. As he was talking, I was going to both of your books and just looking at the pictures of the beach and wondering, how can somebody 20 years old do that and not have it affect them the rest of their lives?
Well, I'm sure it does.
You know, and maybe this is something I always kind of curious about. Do you think that these stories, and Martin, I'll go to you first. Do you think that these stories and these pictures become more, I don't know, more pronounced, I guess, in a veteran's mind as they get older? You still there?
Martin?
Appears as though we've lost him again.
This is Wayne.
Okay. Well, then, Wayne, I'm going to go to you. And Nina, if you... Well, she's on the phone, so maybe she's either getting him back or give Dwight Zimmerman a call.
You know, I'm, and we had John McGinnis on last week and talking about Omaha and all the confusion that, and which inevitably would happen. But I think the thing that I just heard, I think was extraordinary, and I'd certainly like you to ask, what about this German airplane? I thought we had air superiority. What's going on? They strafed our troops? I never saw that. I never heard about that.
We remember the longest day, the, what's this guy, Priller, I believe his name was, who did some of the British. There were several got up.
So some of the German planes did get up.
Well, why didn't we have our fighters circling overhead to take care of that? I'd like that answer.
We got to go back 70 years and figure out what was going on at the time. I'm just always fascinated when I get to talk to these. They're not that much older anymore, but to some of these older veterans and how clear their memories are of everything. Have you found that to be the same, Wayne?
This is Wayne. Sure. Yeah, I have. I've talked to veterans all my life, and those events from there are as clear as they were yesterday. I mean, they don't remember what happened last week, but they remember what happened back then.
Oh, absolutely. I don't remember what happened yesterday, but it is amazing how these things stand out. And Ed Gorman is like so many of the other, you know, this greatest generation. He's so involved in veterans affairs in New Jersey that he's got a thing called Lest We Forget to make sure that veterans are not forgotten. He's got scholarships and everything else going for him. So it's just nice to be able to talk to a gentleman like that. Don't you call me sir?
Yeah.
You know, he's 90. He's the sir, don't you think? Well, anyhow, I'm going to ask you to put Dwight up on the line now while we're still trying to get back to Wayne. So, Dwight, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, Dwight.
Well, hi there, Wayne. Hi there, Dale and Bob. You know, it's so nice to be, you know, here with all of you guys. No, this is fun.
It is fun, and it's fun when we get the opportunity to talk to you guys who have documented so many of these stories in writing and to get these stories down so that these men and women are not forgotten ever. I mean, they're just amazing people, as we've always said on this program, just everyday, ordinary people who did extraordinary things in the service of their country. Luckily, they survived and were able to tell their stories, and that's what we're all dedicated to it, you know, it sounds like, don't you think?
Yeah, for better or worse, I mean, you know, I'm a writer, and
what you do?
Fascinated with military history, and as things developed over my career, I felt it was an obligation and an honor to be able to tell these stories, both great and small. You know, as you know, Dale, you know, I've told about generals and right down through to private soldiers, you know, the terror of combat and everything. As you know, and to remind, and to tell, some of the listeners, I'm a civilian. So this is a double burden for me.
Yeah, you may be a civilian, but you've got military blood running through your veins and especially through your imagination. And that's what we need. We need writers like you that are devoted to tell these stories. I want to remind our audience that I'm talking with Dwight Zimmerman right now, who happens to be the president of the Military Writers Society of America, and he just has his latest paperback version of Lincoln's Last Days was published, and this is the book that was written with Bill O'Reilly, and it is number one on the New York Times list, and we know him. We know a number one writer.
He's one of us, Dale.
That's right. He's one of us. And,
this is regular Larry King guest, right? Right here on Veterans Radio,
folks. Better than Larry King. He's an idiot. And he doesn't talk to people like we talk to people. But
we'll hear from his lawyer.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. If I call everybody an idiot, I'm always an idiot, so it doesn't make any difference, right? So, Dwight, we've been talking with Wayne, and we've also been talking with Martin about their amazing books on Normandy. And I know that you just finished a whole series of articles on Normandy. And I wondered what you took away from what you were, what your research was and who you thought were the most interesting characters in this whole deal.
Well, obviously, there are so many tales. And years ago, I visited France over the Christmas. This is actually when I was dating the Frenchwoman who became my wife.
Oh, yeah. And,
we did a, this was over from January 1st through February. So we took a trip to the provinces, and of course I did the obligatory trip to the Normandy beaches. So this was in early February, and I'm standing on Omaha Beach, on the beach itself, and I'm looking up at the cliff, and I'm looking down at the beach, and I'm looking up at the cliff, and you can still see, where the emplacements were, and I'm going, they were there, we were here.
Mm-hmm.
They were there, we were here. And, okay, this is February, so it's gray and it's overcast and everything like that, which was, in effect, the similar type of weather that they had between the two storms that occurred, on D-Day.
Isn't it amazing, though, when you picture the whole idea of the Germans were up on these cliffs looking down, and here coming across the channel are all these boats and ships and sailboats and rowboats and whatever it takes to get these men on the beach. And you've got to wonder what they thought. And, of course, Rommel had everything all planned out, these cross-firing ranges and the mines and everything going on. And if he had been able to convince Hitler to bring his Panzer Division down a little bit sooner, he might have, carried the day.
You're absolutely right. I just looked at that thing, and I just said, just from the basic, standpoint of the things, I was in awe that the troops on Omaha Beach managed to get out, they accomplished what they did. I was up there on the top, and I'm looking down, and I'm going through the different, emplacements and everything. And I came away in absolute admiration for what our troops on June 6th did there at Omaha Beach. Now, as for an individual that I really admired, in all of my research and writing, it's Brigadier General Theodore Roosevelt Jr.
Okay.
Yes, because he accompanied the troops onto the beach at Omaha, And he did this in defiance of his commanding officer. And his reason for it was, I am going to be with troops who have never been in combat before. Mm-hmm. So it was, he wanted to be there as a morale booster to steady them and, you know, and help them get through this. He had been in World War One. He had been, you know, extensive combat experience. So he understood the fear that so many of these kids, as you know, they were kids.
Right, yes. That's Ed, he's 20 years old. What do you know at 20 years old?
Yeah, and teenagers. And that he, you know, and he did, and he was, well, crippled is not quite the right word, but he had a cane, yeah, you know, because he had serious arthritis. So there this brigadier general hobbling around on the beach with a cane, you know, and he's coming up to these kids, you know, that are essentially his grandchildren, you know, insofar as age is concerned, saying, that's okay, go ahead, you can do this. And, as a result of that, he was awarded the Medal of Honor, you know, his action at Omaha Beach. Now, unfortunately, he suffered a heart attack a few weeks later, and so it wound up being a posthumous Medal of Honor. But that was, his action there, you know, going against his commanding officer's orders, getting there on the beach, walking around, you know, with a cane, you know, hobbling.
I can't imagine. That's an amazing story. Wayne, I know you. You talk about him briefly in your story too, don't you?
I have him in there. Yeah.
I thought you did, and I also in Martin Morgan's The American on D-Day is the photography book. There's a picture of him hobbling around the beach trying to, you know, motivate these people to get up. I'm still amazed at that whole thing. There's a story that people could look at in the news of an English artist who last week drew silhouettes of the 9,000 Allied troops that were killed on the beaches of Normandy, and it was just an amazing story. So if you know, get into Google, you can go in and look that type of thing up. It's an invasion, and it turns out it wasn't the largest invasion in the history of the world. I thought it was, but luckily one of you or all of you have corrected me on that. And we're coming up to the end of the program here, so I got to plug everybody. So Dwight Zimmerman, thank you very much. Military Writers, go in there and buy his new paperback book. It's a great story. Dwight, thanks very much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Wayne Van Sant, his book is Normandy, A Graphic History of D-Day. Thank you very much for your stories.
Glad to be here.
And this is a great, great book for kids especially. And I've missed out on saying goodbye to Martin, but it's Martin Morgan, The Americans on D-Day. And you can get all of these books through the Veterans Radio bookstore. Make sure that you go there. Look for Veterans Radio on Facebook. Jim Falsone is going to be co-hosting next week with Bob or me, one of the two of us. And he's going to be talking about the benefits of outdoor experiences on veterans. And for those of you in the local area, June 11th, General Falsone is giving a seminar at the Yankee Air Museum from 10 to 2 on June 11th. Until next week, you are dismissed.